Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Radio EduTalk. This is one of our fortnightly specials on the Professional Learning for Teachers channel, a channel dedicated to having on the shows teachers and other educationists who have conducted action research or other forms of research. And I'm delighted this evening to welcome to the show Eugene Dapper. Good evening, Eugene.
Good evening.
And we have, I suppose, quite a short time, so we'll crack on and get right into hearing about one of your most recent pieces of research around a master's that you were studying. But just for the benefit of listeners, it'd be great if you could just say a few words about your career in education to date, including maybe a bit of information on your present role.
Yeah, certainly. I've been, I'm 37 years old now. When I graduated, I originally started teaching in mainstream secondary schools, but then got the urge to travel the world for 2 years. And I enjoyed teaching in Australia for that period of time. And then when I returned to the UK, I ended up deciding I didn't want to go in education for a while. And then after a year, I rejoined education, realizing that that's what I wanted to do. But then ended up teaching with children with emotional and social behavior difficulties, students who've been excluded from mainstream schools. And then I spent the next 11 years teaching this particular demographic of student. And I worked myself up through to become assistant head teacher in a school in London, where I was held that position for six, seven years. And now recently, the start of this year, I've moved back into mainstream schools, and I'm now teaching in a school in Newham in London as well, 11 to 16 school, very large school, 1,500 students, and it's a language specialist school. Okay. So that's me now.
And is your present title, is it Year Progress Leader?
Yeah, Year Progress Leader, yes.
What does that actually mean? What does it entail?
It's really interesting, actually. It's a new title. It's a head of year, effectively. Mm-hmm. They previously called the Year Progress Leader Year Leaders, but they've included the title Progress because the school's very keen on ensuring that everyone is engaged in not just the pastoral side of the students, but with that focus on, you know, what are they here to achieve and succeed in.
We're going to look at some research that you did just a few years ago into young urban leaders, and by that we're talking about leaders within schools. And if you're listening to the live show or indeed the podcast, then you can leave a message for Eugene, or if it's a live show, you can interact live. There's two ways that you can do. So you can get in touch via Twitter, just pop something up on Twitter and include the hashtag EduTalk, EduTalk. And if you're on, if you're using email, you can also get in touch with a question, a comment or some advice, whatever, just by emailing EduTalker, EduTalkr @hotmail.co.uk. So Eugene, if you wouldn't mind just kind of introducing first of all, a little bit about the masters that you were actually involved in, and then, you know, what kind of led to this research project around young urban leaders.
Yeah, it's when I started my leadership journey from being a classroom teacher and then a senior teacher and then an assistant head, I was like a sponge for information. I just wanted to know more about leadership. And it got to a point where it plateaued the amount of information that the borough could provide. So I then decided, right, I need to look at this at a slightly bigger scale. So I completed a master's at the Institute of Education in London. And in one of the modules that was being run, one of the doctors there, Karen Edge, we were having a discussion around leaders and around young leaders, and that there was currently no research internationally on young leaders and what it was like to be a young leader, somebody under the age of, you know, 38 years old, leading a school, whether it be assistant head, deputy head or head teacher. So together with her and somebody else who is currently a head teacher who's 27 years old in London, of a primary special school, who's held just got that position now this year. We conducted 2 years ago, finished it in 2009, so that's even longer now, actually, that's 4 years ago. We conducted a piece of action research into young leaders and their experiences of leading at a young age. And the research was really groundbreaking because it was the first time that the young leaders had ever felt that they could talk about their experiences of leadership and what it was like to be a young leader. And that was the springboard for, once that had been completed, for Karen Edge to then apply for a Economic and Social Research Council grant. And the grant was in the region of £350,000 to then look at, the title is Young Global City Leaders, looking at young leaders in London, New York and Toronto, and looking at the experiences of young leaders due to the fact that there are a lot of head teacher shortages.
And many of the listeners to EduTalk are based in Scotland, so might be quite useful to get a bit more context. I noticed in the introduction to your dissertation back in 2009, in setting the context, you refer quite a bit to, for example, the National College for School Leadership. Can you say a bit about what their involvement was back then in helping to sort of grow the next group of school leaders and in England, and I suppose further afield as well, and say something about maybe what the National College of School Leaders then became, because I understand there was a change recently.
Yeah, absolutely. The National College for School Leadership has held many titles over the years, and it's now the National College. Over the time, and the remit of the National College was an organisation to support the development of leadership in schools. And that's its primary function. Over the years, it's held many, it's varied its approach, but primarily the approach is developing, identifying talent and nurturing talent within organisations at a local level within schools, then also holding national conferences to support the development of leaders on a system-wide level. The National College also supports the NPQH, National Professional Qualification for Headship, and also the now defunct Leading from the Middle Leadership Pathways. So it oversaw all of the nationally recognised leadership programmes. So that's its development. Now the National College has come under the arm of Department for Education. And if you log on to the National College website, it comes under the Department for Education.
You wrote, you reference quite regularly in your 2009 paper, the National Standards for School Leadership, and
yeah,
I think that'll be of interest to many listeners in Scotland. We've just got the new suite of professional standards that we still have our own General Teaching Council in Scotland, and there's new standards for leadership and management. So can you give us a wee kind of flavour about what the National Standards for School Leadership consists or consisted of?
It's really interesting, the national standard. It's an overarching set of skills that any leader should possess. I think they are really useful. It's almost like the national standards for teachers, which we have at the moment, but one just for leaders. It's quite useful to be able to refer back to something like that. And if you're plotting your own professional development, I think it's really useful to be able to have that as a framework from which you can identify your strengths and opportunities for development. Although it's not government policy at the moment, it's still referred to by many schools, even the school I'm at now, as to something which you need to not necessarily achieve, but the skills that you need to have to be able to move forward. It's interesting you mentioned the General Teaching Council, the organisation which I'm also part of. I'm part of the executive committee of the Royal College of Teachers, and who were initially instrumental in kind of pushing forward the notion of a General Teaching Council in the UK, which is now fell to one side. In the Royal College of Teachers, I'm part of the executive committee of that organisation, which supported the initial discussion many years ago, which generated the General Teaching Council, which is now, as we know, defunct in the UK. Sorry, not in the UK, in England. But what's really interesting, I suppose, about that the whole discussion is now we're moving towards a College of Teaching, whereby there's a national discussion around a College of Teaching, raising the status of the profession. And I find that really interesting because, to me, that chimes with the notion of having head teachers who aren't teachers leading organisations, and I suppose I find that really fascinating in itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I'm kind of spending quite a lot of time here in the kind of context, not only of your paper, but of kind of English education.
Yeah, sure.
In recent years, you kind of explore it in your paper in the introduction about how England went about or currently does go about identifying tomorrow's leaders, and you talk about how that's kind of the national colleges involved in that, and I think you suggest that some literature points that it really needs to be done at a very kind of local level, maybe due to the idiosyncrasies of areas or specific schools or services. So can you say a bit about the kind of recent past about how the various aspects of English education or the system went about identifying its future leaders? You know, was it,
yeah,
were there various programmes? Was it about identifying, you know, teachers very early on in their career?
It's a really interesting point you raise. When we interviewed a lot of the candidates, what we found is that a lot of them had received a tap on the shoulder, in effect, from their leaders, suggesting that it would be in their interest to apply for a leadership role that was going to be forthcoming within the school. So a lot of the initial leadership experiences were, firstly, they were unofficial positions. They were just an additional responsibility that they were held within the school. And then the first initial experiences were within that school, whereby somebody had approached them and said, I think it's a good idea that you apply for this job. So we found that in the research that a lot of people, their first experiences was within the same organisation that they started out in. It was very rare for somebody to leave one organisation and then go to another organisation and become, for example, a senior leader. They would have had to have demonstrated a certain amount of, you would have to progress slowly through the ranks to become a leader, before people would recognise you in another school setting.
Yeah, so and there wasn't really, from what we had heard, there wasn't really a systematic approach of identifying talent. It was leaders within the organisation there wasn't a systematic way of doing it. People were just approached and suggested it would be a good thing that they would do. But in the majority of instances, it was people showing that initial interest and pushing themselves forward, which is what drove their leadership development. So on the one hand, you've got local school-wide kind of talent identification programs. And then on the other side is you'd have these national programs as well, which would support the leadership development. Because really in the UK, it seemed like there wasn't anything that even existed at a borough-wide level, although that was pretty sporadic. So the next step, it was school or it was at a national level, and that's where the National College came in. So then you could apply for things like middle leadership development courses or slightly higher senior leadership development courses or your head teacher's qualification. And then alongside that, you would have organisations, private organisations, which would support leadership development. I think I mentioned one called Future Leaders. There's another organisation now as well called Teach First. So these organisations are very prominent at the moment in that their main aim is to develop a new cohort of leaders. And in the case of Future Leaders, it's to develop leaders who will work in challenging inner-city urban schools. And in the case of Teach First, it's a case that they, as a non-for-profit organisation, aim at getting Oxbridge graduates into education as quick as they can. So literally from without a teaching degree, they come from a university degree, and then they're teaching from the summer to the next. And then the expectation is that they develop their leadership talent and teaching and learning skills as quickly as they can, mm-hmm. so that they can maybe channel these individuals into leadership positions.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting. I think it was in your literature review you identified that quite a significant percent of people who were maybe in, I think it was in early leadership roles or indeed the early stages of a headship, that they would, I think the percentage was higher in terms of who they would go to for support. I think there was a higher percentage of these individuals were using consultants rather than maybe more established sort of government-backed organisations such as the National College. And I found that quite interesting that it appeared that it was maybe an industry within England of maybe is it former inspectors or retired head teachers that are maybe going around and, you know, this is me assuming and maybe going too far down the road, but were possibly involved heavily in coaching and mentoring, possibly at a local level.
Yeah, there is that. Currently it's a very interesting landscape. Because at the moment, with the economic downturn, it's meant that whereas 5 years ago, there was the discussion that where were we going to get all these head teachers from? Mm-hmm. Because the majority of head teachers, or not the majority, a lot of head teachers now can't retire as early as they used to.
Right.
They're now staying in the profession longer, which has meant there's been a stalling of this succession planning, mm-hmm. Which is interesting because previously what would happen is head teachers would retire and then they would work privately and support schools and head teachers, and they would work as school improvement partners, and then they would also act as consultants developing leadership programs across the country and also working individually with schools, either within whole leadership team or acting as coaches for specific leaders in each organization. So there's a whole industry in the UK based around your ability to be successful at your role, and then it allows you or gives you the opportunity to then come back into the sector in a private manner as a consultant to develop leadership or a range of other things, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And you wrote about, again, you identified, this is kind of like 4 years ago now, but you identified a kind of common concern at the time of this demographic, so-called demographic time bomb, and a very interesting phrase, pipeline sluggishness, and the concerns around succession planning, which goes off in all sorts of tangents. It's not just to do with actually getting somebody, getting the ideal candidate, but also being able to, or enabling them to bed in, so to speak. So has it actually, I suppose we're doing this in reverse because we're still here about your research, but have things kind of panned out the way that you expected, or do you sense maybe because of the economic downturn that all these concerns that we had 4 or 5 years ago have yet to actually occur, but they sure as will, because we haven't sorted out the problems meantime and these people can't go on forever?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we were talking about this not so long ago, actually, ourselves. The economic downturn has definitely stalled this demographic time bomb. It's meant that a lot of people have stayed within the profession for longer. And that's been positive for the profession in that there hasn't been this gap. But it's also just, it's avoiding that inevitable scenario whereby a lot of people will then retire at a certain point in time. But what's interesting at the same time that's happened is there's been a huge increase in the amount of people going through, for example, the private organisations in schools, for example, Teach First and Future Leaders. And their increase means that there is an increase in capacity of leaders at a lower level. So on the one hand, you know, that the retirement of teachers has been held off, and that has actually been for a positive effect for the teaching profession, I would say. It's allowing also schools to nurture their own talent so that they can fill that gap as well.
Mm-hmm. So it'd be great just now, Eugene, to hear a bit more about the research that you conducted then. So I think you termed it explorative research, and I would assume that's to do with the fact that looking at young urban leaders was an area that hadn't really been touched upon before.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just really dipping our toe in the water just to see if there was something in it. And there was, because we had some very interesting discussions whereby leaders at a very young age were just telling us about the ageism at the other end of the spectrum that they experienced, and the stereotypes that they were often confronted with, and the manner in which they had to overcome those obstacles. And it was very interesting to hear those stories. It was also very interesting to hear how people had achieved what they had achieved at such a young age. There, we were surprised at the amount of people who, it was interesting, once you start asking that question, how old you are, then it was interesting because then they say, oh, no, we knew somebody else. But it's not something that was spoken about that often. It was the snowball effect of generating a group of young people who were willing to talk about their experiences was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. So can you say a bit more about your methodology?
Yeah, the methodology was really interesting, actually. We decided to conduct our research as interestingly as we could, because we felt that, you know, making a stereotypical judgment as well of the group that we were looking at, Generation X, we felt that, you know, at the end of a hard working day, I guess like most people, we wanted to be engaged in activities which would be stimulating for them and gain as much information as we could. So we came up with, as opposed to a bog standard interview, although we did conduct some interviews as well, we came up with four different tools. One was whereby we collected a range of data, their demographic data, where they were working, but also asked them some questions about what they wanted to do when they were older, you know, what advice they would give to a young person. So that was one tool. That was a pretty bog standard tool. That was a postcard that we created. I say bog standard, but it was actually quite creative in the research field, because normally people just ask a range of set of interview questions. And then the other tools, which were really quite innovative, we conducted a career trajectory whereby we gave the candidates we had them join together in an evening for drinks, which were slightly unorthodox as well. So we gave them the drinks after the event. But we had the group of young leaders, and we got them then to write down their leadership experiences on a trajectory, whereby they would mark it with their age and what the leadership experiences were, even from a very young age to their current position. And then we would get them to qualify whether or not the leadership experiences, whether they were invited into that role, or whether somebody had approached them, whether they had moved between schools. We also asked them things like what their defining moment was in their life, and how that influenced them as an individual, and how that influenced them as a leader. And then we got them to interview each other as well, which was innovative as well. So then the person interviewing them scribed on the actual career trajectory as well. So that was one method of collecting a range of what would otherwise be bog standard interview questions. Mm-hmm. And then the other two pieces were, we created some mind maps where we looked at the opportunities and some of these strengths of being a young leader, or the challenges of being a young leader. And so we got them to work in groups to come up with a range of terms which kind of typified that. And then the last thing that we got them to do is we got them to sort a set of cards which reflected the how they perceived as being a leader, or their leadership skills, a selection of words which they then classified from being the most relevant to least relevant. And then we got them to do the same again for somebody who was a young leader, so getting that notion of being a stereotype that they could possess for them. Mm-hmm. So these four tools are very innovative and gained a huge amount of data from our initial cohort.
You've touched on some of your findings briefly, Eugene, but could you just kind of paint a more complete picture then about what you found, and I suppose how you then presented those findings to the education community?
Yeah, so the data that we got from the research, it was then taken forward to springboard into a international piece of research, and to look at young leaders across three different countries in Toronto and New York. And the reason we chose those countries, sorry if I'm reading the question quickly, the reason why we chose those countries is because they're very similar in their political, ideological makeup. So they're all, English-speaking communities. But then the similarity is also that they borrow each other's education policies quite heavily. For example, in Toronto, in Ontario, the Education Board took the findings which were generated here in the UK by the National College, the seven strong claims about school leadership, which is instrumental. They have used that in Toronto as the framework from which they conduct all leadership development across the whole state, which is fascinating. So they've generated what is regarded as internationally one of the best leadership development programs on in a statewide process. And so they've used the research here in the UK to generate this amazing leadership program. And then you have New York, which has got so many different actors in the education field that it ranges from private and public state. It's a mishmash of providers. So, and the UK is kind of the middle ground between the two. So the three different areas, London, New York, and London, London, Toronto, and New York, are this sliding scale along continuum of policy intervention, being one where it's highly state governed in Ontario to one where it's a highly it's a market forces driven, which is in New York.
Okay, and I know it's with your initial work being explorative in nature, and you've still been in the midst of work presently, but can you say at all of kind of key conclusions that you've reached in your research over these years of research?
It's very interesting. We're currently writing up, so we can't tell you too much, unfortunately.
Of course.
Before it's being published. But what we can say is what has been very interesting is the amount of leaders who are getting younger and younger over time. It's very noticeable that the opportunities for people to lead at an earlier age are there, and they weren't there previously. The traditional leadership pathway doesn't exist. It does exist, but it runs alongside a fast-track program at the moment as well, whereby people are entering leadership positions at a much earlier age. And the knock-on effect is very interesting because the perceptions of those they lead has changed. And it's more frequent that people are being led. And I suppose one of the things that we've started to question is where the research goes from here. It's about the perception of others on the young leaders and about how they perceive these young leaders. Because we focused on the young leaders themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But the other flip side is, the followers, so to speak, their perception. And some of the other things that we've also come, one of the main things that we keep on coming up against is that people don't see themselves being in a leadership position for the next 30 years. So if you get to be a head teacher, as my friend is at the age of 27, he said he's not going to be a head teacher for the next 30 years, mm-hmm. and he won't have retired by then. So what happens to young leaders? Will it just, is it actually going to solve this, leadership gap, this head teacher vacancy, or is it just going to defer the problem onto the next generation?
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating, Eugene. And I should have mentioned this earlier, but you've referred quite a lot to distributed leadership and distributive leadership. And I thought it was an interesting piece of work that you cited, I think it was early et al., talking about the benefits of actually reducing the autonomy of school leaders, and that kind of being bound with notions of distributed leadership, and I hadn't thought about that, about the, I mean, is that what you're seeing, that these young leaders are fitting within that kind of recent approach, or one that's in recent years has been thought of as being or assumed to be beneficial, that leadership should be distributed down the kind of old hierarchies?
It's interesting, actually, you should mention that, because our strand of our research at the moment is based also on generations. Mm-hmm. And I suppose what's really interesting about generations is there's a stereotype that is generated with each generation, you know, baby boomers, Generation X, Y, and so forth. And Generation X, the study, the cohort which we're meant to be focusing on at the moment, is meant to be very collegiate. So it should all be about distributed leadership. It should all be about, you know, engaging others in that process. And we are seeing that. But I suppose what I suppose is interesting is, if you are a leader of a generation, what are you influenced by? Are you influenced by the generation which you grew up? Or are you influenced by the education system which you grew up in? So, for example, are you a result of, for example, the national curriculum in 1988 when that got introduced? So is the manner in which you view the education sector as a whole, is that reflective of that particular period of time? So the leaders who are coming through now, who were born in 1988, so they would have been fully-fledged national curriculum leaders,
yeah.
Are they better at, for example, levels, targeting, you know, action plans? Are they better at that because that's their only experience? Or are the leaders now, Generation X, who were who grew up in a different system and then experienced the national curriculum either towards the latter end of their educational life up to 18, you know, does that have an influence on them as a leader? And that's another area which is of great interest to us.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're just going into the last couple of minutes of the show, Eugene, and I'll just remind anyone that's listening to the live stream or the podcast that you can leave a comment or a question that we can forward on to Eugene in two ways. You can pop something up on Twitter using the hashtag edutalk, or you can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk. And I'll also mention that if you go to the edutalk.cc and click on the tab for professional learning for teachers, then you'll also find under the link for Eugene's audio a hyperlink which will take you to some recommended reading. There's a link there to the ESRC, that's right, isn't it? ESRC research, yep, project that Eugene's involved in. And he's also kindly offered us some reflective questions that you might want to take kind of cognizance off after the show. Now, just to finish up, Eugene, from myself, you again in your early paper, as many people would have done at the time, you've referenced the likes of Fullan and Hargreaves. Are people like them, is their work still relevant, or as we move into, I think you used the phrase, kind of new models of leadership? Are there other writers that are interesting and to you, and who are influencing you presently?
Yeah, it's interesting. If something's not broke, you know, kind of don't fix it, if it makes sense. So the work that we're, for example, generating and creating is building upon, you know, all of the work which has preceded us. The, you know, Hargreaves, you know, and a range of the other writers who, you know, Michael Fullan and a lot of the researchers, they are all very relevant. And they haven't, you know, their relevance has not diminished at all. In terms of current researchers, they are still pretty much the big names at the moment. Mm-hmm. Michael Fullan, you know, Hargreaves, Peter Early, they are all big, you know, they're all the big names in education, international, Alma Harris, and, you know, all these, they're all the big names. So at the moment, their body of knowledge is what we still go to when we are looking at any piece of research.
And what can we look out for from yourself then, and the colleagues that you're that you're working with presently, and where will we be able to find excerpts or full text from your work in the future months and years?
Where would you be able to find that? I'm currently building my own website at the moment. Well, I do have the website. I'm just going to build it so then I can start publishing my publishing the work that I've been doing. But if you do Google my name, you will find me up there. I've written a recent article for the Royal College of Teachers about the art of teaching. So you can read that as well. But definitely, if you Google my name, my website is currently being built, shall we say.
Okay. That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for taking time out on this a Sunday evening. It's just close to the clocks changing. Really appreciate that, Eugene, and best wishes for the future.
No, thank you very much.